Good morning and welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I'm Mary Mullen, a member of the program committee. And I want to let you know that Prairie aspires to be both an open-hearted and an open-minded congregation, and that we welcome people of every ethnic background, every religious background, whatever your color, whatever your orientation, sexual orientation, your gender, or your family structure. And we welcome you also no matter what your age, old, young, or middle, your abilities or inabilities. Later in the service, we're going to invite visitors, guests, and returning friends to introduce yourselves so that we might get to know you better. And I just want to share that when I was a student, an exchange student at Spelman College in Atlanta, Georgia, the first Sunday they took me to a church, a black church. We called it Negro back then. And I was shocked that they asked me to get up and introduce myself, but we do that here too. On Sunday mornings, we provide a large variety of services that are presented either by a Prairie member, a member of the wider community, which is true today, or by our minister, who will be back with us soon. She's moving here. Today, Sarah Wilcox will be presenting a service called Serve and Fair Trade, Providing Opportunity and Support to Artisans and Farmers Worldwide. Well, I'd like to introduce our speaker today, Sarah Wilcox. She's been working with Serve since 2007, so that's about 5 years. First, she was a member of the product development team, and now she's the store manager down there on Monroe Street. Is that right? You're on Monroe Street. And she's had the privilege of meeting many of the producer partners that produce the items that are for sale at the store. And she says she finds daily joy in connecting with customers and consumers with the message of dignity and compassion. So, welcome.
Can I come down here so I can see the screen as well?
Can you still hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Okay, great. Well, thank you everybody for having me today. I really appreciate it. I'm not our usual speaker, so bear with me and don't make your questions too hard during the discussion or I'll cry. But like she said, I have been with Sir for 5 years and now I get the joy and pleasure about being the manager at Sir on Monroe Street. So, I've interspersed artisan pictures throughout this presentation because I really feel like that's the backbone of Sir. This is why we exist, and everything that we do comes back to the artisans that we represent. So what is Serve? We are a nonprofit fair trade organization that's been around for more than 60 years. Our goal is to eradicate poverty wherever it resides, mind, body, spirit, everywhere around the world. And we do that by making direct relationships with artisan and farmers throughout the world. We support our artisan and farmer partners to make sustainable choices on the materials that products are made of. One of the principles of fair trade, and I'll get to more of them later, is environmental responsibility and sustainability. We're really looking to benefit entire communities, so not just one artisan group, and then the rest of the community isn't helped by it, but the entire community. Our goal is to lift everyone out of poverty. So we do this through various different ways. Here gives a couple artisan quotes. On the left here, one of the carpet weavers from Nepal from Kumbeshwar Technical School. With my earnings, I now am more independent and don't rely on my husband for money. I'm able to pay for food for my family, my child's education, and even have some pocket money. And that's one of the things I hear over and over and over when I have the privilege to meet with different artisan groups. The women especially say, this gives me a say in my life. I'm able to send my children to school. And that gives me goosebumps every time. And I think it also really brings it back to things that we have here that sometimes we take for granted. the fact that, you know, sending our children to school is something everyone around the world wants to be able to do. And on the right there was a Ghanaian basket weaver that just talked about being able to be part of her community, and that's great. So how do we practice fair trade? There are 10 key principles that the World Fair Trade Organization and the Fair Trade Federation serve as founding members of both of those organizations, that they say, okay, this is what fair trade means. One of them, supporting the equal rights for women and preventing child exploitation, building long-term dependable relationships with our artisan and farmer partners. So a lot of our groups we've been working with for 40 years, and we're able to see the process grow and change. So maybe a group started off making a certain type of ceramic, and then we saw that consumers were maybe not really interested in buying that. So our product development team works with them on how to make a product that does appeal to a more Western audience, but also still takes into account kind of the cultural tradition in which the artisans are used to working with. Could you go back a little? Just one thing. So like I said before, ensuring care for the environment. We make sure that the wood that the products are made of is from faster growing trees. We try and make sure that all of the, we don't try and make sure, we make sure that all of the dyes used are azo free. Just a lot of things that go up and make a better impact on the environment and on our world. We also do mainly sea shipping as opposed to air freight. And that makes a huge difference, but it also means that sometimes when people come into the store and say, can you order me this product? Or, oh gosh, you're out of that. And no, is the quick answer if you want it right now, because it actually takes about 6 months. So the artisan will get an order, and then they'll have to physically make that order. Everything is handmade. And then they ship it back. So it's a different kind of system. We're really looking at a different kind of way in which to do business. Guiding sustainable development, making sure that choices are made so that the groups that we work with are long-term and sustainable. It's not a one-time buying opportunity. We don't just go to a place and say, hey, I like those baskets, we're gonna buy 20 of them, and then leave that community and never know again about them. One of the great things that CERV does is provide prepayments for orders. So let's say a group needs to gather a bunch of embroidery floss in order to make the handmade pillows. Well, we can provide a prepayment for them so they can purchase that embroidery floss and not go into debt in order to make the products that we've requested. And of course, you know, many of us have heard fair trade means a fair price. And that is definitely correct, but it's just a little part of it. So all these things go to making sure that we're really fair trade. So how are we different? We exist solely to help the artisans and farmers that we have made commitments towards. We are a nonprofit, so all the proceeds of everything go right back to working with and making sure all these groups are sustainable. Which goes into developing those long-term relationships. Whenever partners request it, we can do a prepayment. We always pay for samples, the shipping expenses, and the custom fees. So artisan groups don't have to worry about those things. They don't have to say, ooh, I'd like to ship you these samples to see what you think of them. But shipping, of course, as we all probably know, is quite expensive. Reducing our environmental impact is a huge priority. And then one of the great things, especially at the store that I work, is I rely on volunteers. The majority of the staff that the store is made up of is volunteer-based. We have a warehouse in New Windsor, Maryland that keeps all the products. And we have groups of volunteers come in almost every week and help us price the products, help us tag things, help us ship things, help us box things. So it's all these things that we really couldn't do unless we had all the wonderful volunteers that help us do it. So here's a map that just shows we work with over 60 artisan groups in 32 different countries. So all of the countries that are in orange is where we have producer partners. So that map probably kind of reminds me of all over the world, there's people that are benefiting from working together. So how does the CERV process work? We have a product development team on State Street, so our offices are located here on State Street, and those wonderful three women work with all of our producer groups and help them develop new products, help them think about trends, help them think about different market trends that are going on in the U.S., and so they help make the product for the following season. The product is then shipped to CERV in New Windsor, where it goes under quality control, and is then stocked in the warehouse. And then we promote it through our CERV catalog that comes out twice a year, as well as through a website. And we have two stores in the United States, one here in Madison, and then the other one is in New Windsor, Maryland, with our warehouse. And the other arm is that we have volunteers do consignment sales with us. Every year. So they'll take some things to their church or their school, sell products, and then part of that is a donation both to them and then back to CERV. And some of the neat things that we have gotten to be able to do in the last couple of years to help designers and producer groups know what's happening in the United States so that they're making products that people actually want to buy. We've started doing a program called Design Camp. It's where we invite four or five different designers from artisan groups around the world to come here to Madison, and then we have a partnership now with the Art Institute of Chicago. So we'll go down to the Art Institute and they'll do color trainings, different kind of trainings to let people know more about the materials that they're using or the products that might be available to make for them. So that's really neat because they get to meet really high class, designers of the Art Institute. And it's been really successful. I think it's been going on for 3 years now. And it's just a really neat opportunity. We had the last one at the end of August. And so we had four designers here. And just meeting with all of them. We came to the store for a while, and it was a great opportunity to hear their stories and have them be in the store and see their products. It was really neat. And each time, and unfortunately this happens a lot, there's a disaster in the world, and it affects one of our artisan producer groups. We try and send aid immediately. So if you've ever been to the store, and I or someone else has asked you to round up, ask if you wanted to do that. We round up your purchase to the next dollar, and that is basically a donation to our Artisan Development Fund. And so when things happen, we're able to send some money down right away to help artisans rebuild their workshops, rebuild their lives. When the earthquake went through Haiti a couple years ago, most of the artisans said, don't send us just money, we want orders. And so CERV put together a big order of one-of-a-kind samples. The artisans were able to make them, we did a prepayment, and then last year we got the shipment. And it was just a really neat opportunity to see their creativity come through their products. And, can you go back with me real quick? And one of the other neat things is we're able to host design partnerships by volunteer designers within countries where our producer groups are. So instead of having to have people come to the U.S. to have those great experiences, we're able to take people to them so that their entire group gets that opportunity. So again, the entire communities get paper, which is a group that's very dear to my heart. They're in Nepal, and when I was in product development, I worked directly with them. It's a group of paper makers that use recycled textiles in order to make paper. And they have just wonderful, wonderful things that they're doing. They offer scholarships to girls to go to one of their five schools. They also run HIV/AIDS programs and help people both understand the disease, how to get it, how to get help for it. And the director of that organization is just, that is his life. That is what he's doing. He's making sure that people within his community live a good life. And in Ghana, it's just like the sustainability and helping people have the opportunity to make their own choices. So here's an artist in the spotlight. We work with an organization called Delta Survey in Mali, and they work with women that are coming to a specific hospital in Mali for obstetric fistula surgery. So a very intense thing, something that is, if it's not taken care of, a lot of people that have it are then shunned in their community. So they go to this hospital, they get recovered, they get surgery, they start recovering, but it takes a long time. And during that time, Delta Survey teaches the women how to make beaded jewelry. When they're finally feeling better and recovering, they can then take that skill back to their village and have a continual source of income. Marketplace Handwork of India, if you've been to the store, you know that we carry a lot of clothing from them. They're an amazing, amazing organization. we had the wonderful pleasure of having not this last summer, but the summer before, we had three women from the organization come to Madison and give a presentation. And one of the women speaking just became really choked up and talked about how this completely changed her life. Her husband was an alcoholic, and whenever she worked before, he took all the money, spent it, and then she wasn't able to send her kids to school. And through working with Marketplace, she was the one that was in control of her money. And was in control of how that helped the family. The women learn how to do the printing of the fabrics, the sewing, as well as the embroidery. And it's now grown to a group of about 400 women. And within the organization, people can kind of break off an offshoot of Marketplace and then become a leader within their own community and helping to pass on those skills to other women. This artisan photo always gets me. It makes me think of my own mother. On the left is Lakshmi, and on the right is Sudha. Lakshmi is Sudha's mom. And the story of this relationship between them is Lakshmi used to do weaving and textile work in Nepal. And again, she wasn't in control of her wages. She wasn't getting good wages. She was working, and she never got to go to school. And so when she started to work for ACP in Nepal, one of our partners, she was then in control of her wages. And she was able to send her daughter, Sudha, to school. And Sudha now has a master's degree in social work. And so it's just one of those stories. And Sudha actually came, I think it was in 2008, to Madison to meet people. And it's a goosebump story, which it really makes a difference. So here's our store, and Miss Megan, our assistant manager, in the doorway there, store on Monroe Street, where all these beautiful products can be found. And let's see what else I put in there. Oh, that's the end of it. so that's it. I think the main thing I just want to have this discussion about and think about is the fact that we all have an opportunity to make a choice, and a choice to change not only our lives, but people's lives. And sometimes, you know, we hear a lot of political jargon and hear these things, and I get to think, oh, is this really real? You know, is this really going to happen? But this is real, and it really does make a difference. And I'm very proud to be part of the organization because I know it is making a difference. The people that I've met have told me to tell.
Okay, so now it's time for questions, answers, comments.
There's not a store. There used to be, 10 years ago, there used to be a store on State Street, and then it was very tiny. And then so we decided to move to Monroe Street to get a little bit more space, as well as provide some better parking for people who wanted it. Sure. So SERV used to stand for Sales Exchange Refugee Rehabilitation and Vocation. So that's kind of a mouthful, right? So we, in 1999, became an independent nonprofit, and we just switched to SERV. before that, we actually started in 1949, and we were part of the Church of the Brethren, and we worked with refugees after World War II. And the first actual product that we imported was cuckoo clocks. Which I think is good with you. But then we switched to really working with developing nations because we saw the need there was much greater. And then how did I get started? So my background's in art therapy. I went to Edgewood here a while back. And I moved out of Madison for a while and then moved back. And then I learned about CERB and I thought, if I'm gonna live in Madison, that's where I wanna work. So I probably applied to 10 positions before I finally broke them down. And they were like, she's not gonna stop applying. And they gave me an interview, and I started off actually as a part-time person in a product development room, and I built the way up, and now I'm at a position that I just love. It's not just all the delicious chocolate that I get to I mean, I think all those things, that's what we're trying to contribute towards, you know? If you have all those things within your community, if you're able to have a sustainable community, I think, you know, you're going through the line of being peaceful and able to being able to make that a priority. You know, I think it's when we struggle so hard to find those things and to be able to sustain ourselves where it just gets really difficult, and that's where kind of that breaks down a little bit. And yes, we have wonderful peace things in our store. My favorite one is a peace wreath made out of, it's kind of a I think it's rattan. It's like a vine, and we hang it usually on our front door. Okay, the first question, the Return Peace Corps calendars, we've carried them for a number of years. Bob Chase, the CEO of CERB, and Sue Chase are both returned Peace Corps members as well. So people in Madison love those calendars, and I just got them into the store yesterday, so I thought, I better bring them here too, just to make sure nobody wants them. Oh, well, are they involved? They're not involved specifically with CERB, no. That's an interesting concept to think about where we could go with that. But as of right now, I don't think there's any direct connections. We don't recruit. So we have a pretty intense process of new groups wanting to work with CERB or being a CERB partner. And they have to fit the fire training criteria that we uphold. And they also have to have some knowledge point of being able to ship and receive and have that import-export kind of component to their organization. We have a kind of international development department that helps groups that aren't to that stage yet and gives them some ideas and different kind of techniques to get to that stage. But because we have so many producer groups that we have committed to working with, we don't want to take on too many because then we're not going to be able to really help those groups. So like we have a lot of basket making groups in Africa, and there's always more people that we have baskets, but we don't, I mean, like we made this commitment. We don't want to saturate, you know, what we can do as well.
Did you have another, there was a second part to your question.
Maybe, I don't personally know, but maybe. I know you had a second part of your question up here is about the women and the men in the division. I think one of the things that we know is that in the developing world, there just hasn't been many opportunities for women to have any kind of source of income. And so while probably in my presentation, I made it seem like, oh, all the men don't like it, there are a lot of men involved with CERB as well. So depending on what product is being made, so we have Ferrara stone, if you've ever seen those little double carved animals that we have at the store, they're really cute. That's mainly a skill that's done by men, or a lot of like the Shechem wood carving is done by men. But I think what it does is balance. It kind of balances that gender dynamic and helps women form a sense of confidence and security within their mindsets. We work with Women's Bean Project in Denver, and I've got some of their soup mixes and cornbread out there. We work with Just Coffee here in Madison. We work with Singing Rooster, which is a Haiti-Madison collaboration. We work with Bright Endeavors in Chicago. They make candles. And then we work with White Earth in Bemidji. They do the wildlife. It really is. I mean, we are friends with anybody that's heard of 10,000 Villages, which is kind of a different strategy. They have more stores throughout the United States, and we decided to do a retail catalog and not have that many stores. So there are wonderful fair trade organizations out there. Yep, a lot of our products are made either upcycled or recycled materials. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but that'd be fantastic. I mean, isn't that what we should do? You know, I mean, it's one of those things that I don't know if that's happening in a broader level in the United States. I just know that Get Paper is doing that. There are 10 principles. I think this slide only had
six
of them, yeah. So, okay, now you're going to put me to the test. Right, cry. There are 10 principles. You can find it on our website. You can find it on the World Fair Trade Organization website. You can find it on the Fair Trade Federation website. And I haven't had enough coffee this morning to tell you everything. afterwards, let me get a drink of coffee, and I bet I can name at least 9 of them. That's a good question. Honestly, our instrument selection has gone down in the past couple of years. We don't carry nearly as many as we used to, and that is because they weren't selling in our catalog. But I'm sure that you and I can talk about some other sources around Madison. Well, I can address it a little bit. I don't know if this is the exact serve addressing of it. In the book, we saw those two labels. Right, and one is the fair trade label, that there's two people kind of together there. There's a differing opinion about how fair trade is being labeled within food commodities right now. It's a really, really intense discussion. It's got a lot of different caveats to it. Fair trade crafts, there is no certification label. You just have to do your research on the organization that says that they're doing fair trade and kind of really know if, and ask a lot of questions like, how are you, what does fair trade mean to you? The fair trade label and what Just Coffee is talking about, it's a difference of small farmer versus larger plantation cooperatives. And so I'm not going to speak to it too much because I don't want to get it confused, and it is a really important conversation to have, mainly because it's important to know how organizations and why organizations are calling them fair trade. Kind of like the organic movement a couple years ago when people were like, hey, organic sells, you know, let's slap that on there. And you had to ask yourself, well, what does that mean to you? You know, how is your organization organic? It's the same thing with fair trade. It's a cool term right now, but without, you know, what's behind it, it doesn't mean anything.
Any more questions? Well, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.